My Love of Life Energy is a podcast created by Anna Scott. Anna knows that every human being sees life uniquely. In this podcast, she will talk to people and learn from them. These conversations are to shine the brilliance of each human being she speaks to. Join her. After each exploration, you will expand on your insights and see truth and beauty.
Good morning and good afternoon, and welcome to my podcast, My Love of Life Energy. And today I have Julie Gleason back on my show today, and Julie is the co-creator of the Art of Living Institute. And the reason I am having her back is that our conversation was so rich, and the reception of it, it's one of my most popular shows. And I don't do any marketing, and I'm watching this interview we do continue to grow. So with that, Julie, it's just an honor to have you back.
Thank you. I love being back, and I love that it's doing that, because, of course, that's why you and I do what we do, is for it to get out into the world.
Yeah, it is. And we were just beginning to have a conversation, and I stopped it because I could feel it's gold. And we were talking about I was talking about my own struggle with being somebody who somebody who's living so much in their head, and I just didn't know what to do about it. And you were talking about, you're about to say something about, like, we used to have to be there.
Yeah. So first of all, I don't experience you anymore. I mean, I've known you a long time, but I don't experience you anymore living from your intellect with noisy thinking as much as when we first met. And so what I was saying was, and when I was in my 40s and 50s, I lived 90% of the time there myself. Mm-hmm. And when it finally dawned on me that life was designed to be enjoyed, it was like a bold insight that came out of nowhere. And mm-hmm. it rocked me, because that noisy thinking wasn't very enjoyable. And it was hard work, right? And so I've been on a quest ever since then to figure out what's the difference between noisy thinking and quiet thinking. And I have this as a reminder to myself, which is, this snow globe, when it's not being shaken and doesn't have a lot of noisy thinking swirling around, there's a Buddha in there that is channeling wisdom and creativity from the intelligence of life. But what I was doing when I was living my life, quite successfully, by the way, I was successful doing this. I was just exhausted and I didn't like it very well. But what I was doing was this, like worrying about things, being anxious about things, worrying about the future, worrying about the past. So I never could hear really what wisdom wanted. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work. But the moment that you realize that that's an illusion, that the intellect has anything to offer us that's new, it can only think what it already knows. The intellect cannot come up with fresh thinking. So anytime we're trying to solve a problem, we need to come back to this, what I call the Buddha state, even though I'm not a Buddhist, but I love the notion that he has a quiet mind, and that's where creativity comes from. It doesn't take very long if I recognize that. And now all of a sudden my heart relaxes and starts to open up, and my head is like, I can ignore all that noise and it goes away, because thought is designed to be on the move. Everything's designed to be on the move, right? I mean, I had a memory the other day when I was in science class, when I was in seventh grade, that we had an electron microscope that we got to borrow, and we looked at the arms of something that we were sitting on, and we could see down into the nucleus of this formed thing, and everything's moving down in there, right? None of it's static. So it looks like it's solid and not moving, but everything's moving, including our thinking. But what we do is we grab hold of those thoughts as they swirl by and go, oh no, I have to keep that one. Oh no, I have to keep that one. Oh no, I have to keep that one. And now we have to think about it again. And as you say, it's an exhausting way to live. And all we ever end up with is thinking we've already had, which we don't want.
You said something, Julie, that a profound insight that you had, and it's something I've been contemplating quite a bit, is that life is for enjoyment. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was such a stunning insight to me that I literally remember where I was standing when I had it. It kind of rooted me to the ground. That the there's actually an operating system, a structure that if we align with it, enjoyment is part of the deal. Now, it doesn't change the circumstances. You and I have had plenty of circumstances we wouldn't choose from a menu. But
No.
going through those circumstances, knowing that we're wired for resilient well-being, kind of like a beach ball floating on top of the water, that our job is to allow for the beach ball to continue to float rather than pushing it down underneath the water. And so I was thinking this morning, I was talking this morning to a group of people, and I said, most people are looking for new tools to help them live better. And what I'm more and more and more clear about is I want people to understand what we already have and how it works so we can quit interfering with it. Right? So if we put water in our gas tanks, not a good thing. The car doesn't work, right? So if we put things in our body that we know aren't good for us and then are surprised that we feel bad, that's a misunderstanding about how the operating system works. And I keep going back to my memory of learning to ride a bike. I'm a twin, and so my poor dad had two of us at the same time. He was trying to train us to ride bikes. But I remember that I couldn't intellectually understand balance. I had to find balance. Like the nature of riding a bike is finding balance. It's not about understanding the bike. It's not about understanding how to ride a bike. It's about finding balance. And I think the same thing's true in life, that we each have to find what does it feel like to have an open heart? And is that when we feel balanced? And what does it feel like to let the thinking that we're currently involved in that we're not enjoying, what does it feel like to let that go? And is that more helpful to us than by continuing to invite it to stay?
I have
That's,
a question.
yeah.
What is I'm so like we've all said open heart. And one of the questions that I am really exploring is how do I know when I have my open heart?
Such a great question. You are one of the smartest people on the planet because you think to ask that question. Yay. The thing I'd like to say about that is we've all had moments of surprise and wonder in our lives. There's a gasp of wonder. And our heart flops open in those moments. We can't help it. It's like we're beaming well-being, we're beaming joy, we're beaming wonder, we're beaming the miraculousness of night, light, of life. And it may just last for a moment, but that is the feeling of a wide open heart. It comes unbidden. Now, the heart is quick to react to everything. So it'll flop open in a moment of wonder, and all we have to do is have the phone ring and it shuts down. Right. It doesn't even have to be a nasty word. Like a loud noise will do it. And so getting clear about the difference between what a closed heart feels like and what an open heart feels like is part of getting our balance. That is one of the cues of whether we're in balance or not. And so my walks in the morning with my three adorable terriers, and then my fourth one is on the second loop, are about how much wonder can I notice or invite in, regardless of whether it's dark or light or cold or hot, or so I call them my wonder walks, my open-hearted walks. And when you're walking terriers, they're bound to do anything. And so, if they see a squirrel or another dog, my heart shuts down completely because I'm anticipating three terriers trying to knock me off my feet. So I'm closed-hearted in that moment. But because I call them my wonder walks or my open-hearted walks, I have learned to pull everybody to the side, feed them treats until the squirrel goes away or the other dog goes away, and then reset to an open heart before I start again. And that's a practice that I do about an hour, hour and a half, 5 days a week, which is my practice for remembering what it feels like to live from an open heart.
And when you're living there, when you're walking, what do you experience that's different versus a closed heart?
Nothing on my mind. And I don't mean I don't have thoughts going through my mind, because I do, but they're not repetitive. They're more like noticing life in a different way. It's like a different lens through which life occurs. So I'll notice things, or possibly things occur and are attracted to me because I'm more open-hearted. So I, about a month ago, was walking. It was maybe 8 o'clock, which is late for me to walk. So the sun was up. And I'd stopped to untangle the leashes. Remember, three terriers. I was a tiny bit annoyed, but I decided that I would just like laugh about it. And so I started to laugh. And the next thing I knew, there was a Western bluebird, which is a very shy bird, that was fluttering like right here in front of my
face. Right.
Like right here. And I had one of those gasp moments, like, now the terriers didn't react. So the bird went down and did the same thing to the terriers. They did not chase it. And the next thing I knew, the bird had flown over and landed right beside us on the side view mirror of a truck that we were going by. And then he kind of looked at all of us, and then he flew off. Now, the rest of that walk was stunning, because I was just free of all intellect. And sometimes I walk and I haven't seen a darn thing wondrous or gorgeous until I get to my own driveway and I think, oh my God, I'm so love my home, right? But I'm always on the hunt for what can I be grateful for? What am I already grateful for? What am I already appreciative of? What can I see that's I've never seen before? Because I walk the same route almost every day. What can I see that I've never seen before that's lovely?
Do you know the poet Mary Oliver?
Yes. Oh, Mary Oliver and dogs. Ooh, yes.
Well, I don't know if you know that you reminded me of Mary Oliver, because when I heard her speak, she walked the same walk every day.
Yeah.
And she would have pens and trees, because she would, just what you'd say, she would get so, a friend of mine would say, gobsmacked.
Yeah, moved by. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you're reminding me of. Like, it's all here, but I'm not aware of it.
Yeah,
you're aware of it.
Yes, and I'm not certain that bluebird I would have noticed if I hadn't stopped and been willing to laugh with my dogs, which opened my heart. I might not have noticed it. Right? It probably would have been there. I mean, I have a story that I tell, Anna. I used to go to a monastery in Idaho, a Benedictine monastery. A friend of mine was studying to become a part of their congregation or monastic tradition. And one of the things that Idaho is known for is great horned owls. And so I've always wanted to see one up close. And they told us that they were just all over their property. And so we were, about the third day we were there, we were walking behind the monastery, and I said, gosh, I haven't seen a great horned owl yet. And he said, well, just stop for a minute and let's look. And he said, now look over your right shoulder. Sitting on a tree limb that was not 3 feet away from me were three juvenile great horned owls, all sitting together in a row looking at me. That's my point, is what we don't see is the miraculous.
Right. Yeah, no, that I've fallen in love with hawks. And I live in, I live in Oakland in a very urban environment, and there's not a day that I do not see a hawk now.
Again, what we focus on is what we have eyes to see and what we attract to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so if we focus on open-heartedness, well-being, kindness, gratitude, satisfaction, peace of mind, guess what we'll notice?
Yeah.
Right? I focus a lot on innocence, especially with my dogs, because it's easy for me to label. I have one dog that is easy for me to label the sheriff because she's always bossing people around, right? But I don't enjoy her as much when I do that. And so I'm careful to see the innocence in her behavior. Like, she is trying to wrangle three dogs that are 8 years old, younger than she is. And she's doing a pretty good job of it, right? And so the innocence of her position in my pack kind of moves me. Like she's 13.
Julie, that word you've said, and it's one of my
innocence
favorite words
that
you've taught me.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, if I share that, because I believe that, I believe that we're all innocent given the level of conscious we're at. And people get so jarred by that. And I'm curious what you see about it.
About the jarring or about the innocence?
Innocence. Like, what is innocent? Because it for me, it allows me not to label and then live with the labels of other people. Like, if I label somebody as something,
right,
then I'm going to live with that label and I'm going to have that experience. But if I see it
and
as
so
innocent,
are they. And so are they. So they have no other room to be other than the label, right? Mm-hmm. When they're with you. So every human being on the planet has the same design, the structure, how we work is the same for everybody. And the only reason that we see people as struggling is because they don't know that their thinking isn't real. So they behave in ways that are trying to get their thinking to settle down. But since they don't know it's their thinking, they resort to things that don't work.
You know what I just felt, Julie,
what was
by the innocence is I felt like, have you ever been to a shipyard or a yacht, like where they store boats? And I was on this, when I label somebody, it's like a narrow stall that they have to get the boat into.
Oh, yeah.
As
like a clip that's almost too small, right?
Right. It's like just minuscule, and it's very tight and constricted, and there's no room for them to go, and there's very little, airs. But what I saw by the innocence, it's like creating a huge port where they get to put their anchor down.
Yes. Yeah, it's a lovely metaphor. Absolutely lovely. And when you start to look at humans, even the ones that are struggling, they're desperately trying to connect and be human, like to be who they know in their quiet moments that they actually are. But, there's so many people who apologize for what they do all the time, as though there's something wrong with them. And if, as you say, we provide this huge port for people to just arrive and be there, well-being pops to the surface and they can breathe again.
Yeah.
And that's the job of my work, and I think yours as well, is to allow people the honor of being seen at the soul level.
Yeah, there's something so beautiful about coming into a place with a human being, another human being, where I get to be just who I am.
Yeah.
And it's like my whole nervous system relaxes.
Yeah.
And then that well-being, like the thing about open-hearted is like, I forgot what it felt like. I had to remember, and I'm remembering at a deep level. That's why I asked, like, what, how do you know? Like,
yeah.
How do I know?
Well, you know, we have human beings, an old mentor of mine used to say, human beings can screw up anything, right? But we can also bring people back to innocence and well-being anytime. But when we look at the structures we've built around us, so if we work for somebody, there's often pressure to conform. If we know ourselves as a black sheep, now we vaguely think there's always something wrong with us. If we go to church, we're now having to prove that we're good enough to be in God's graces. I mean, all of that is human thinking gone amok. And is there something bigger than me that I might call God or life force energy? Yes, but it is a non-judgmental power. It's a creative, wise, intelligent, abundant power that we came into life with. And then we spend a great deal of our life pretending that we're in this life on our own, and we're not. So when our hearts are open, we're back in alignment with life force energy, with the whatever's bigger than us energy that, thank God, is beating my heart and making my pancreas work and my liver work and my kidneys work. Because if I had to pay attention to all that, oh my Lord, I would mess it all up. Even when I say that, my breathing gets weird.
You know, it's, if I go back to that metaphor, Julie, about the being the ship that can come into this big port, is what I feel is the love.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's like coming from a wild ocean and coming into a calm port, a large calm port where you can go, oh, right. And the thing that's so odd is I experience this benevolent energy as being not just with me, but of me. Like, I am of it and it is of me. It's like being a wave in the ocean, but the ocean and the waves are still all one thing. And so the illusion of separation between human beings is what keeps our hearts defended. Like, we have to protect from the other way,
yeah,
which is kind of nutty, right? And will there be storms on the ocean? Yes. But if we knew we were all part of the same ocean, generosity and wisdom and communion and community would be more natural.
You know, I had this experience yesterday when you talked about the separate with my daughter.
And your best surprise, teacher, right? Your daughter.
Yep, she is. And she asked me, am I mad at you? Which I was mad at her. And I realized at a very deep, deep cellular level, I was scared of her. And it was so, I was so shocked by my honest response to her. And I thought, I don't think it's her. I think it's like human beings, like, because we thought we were separate, I just became scared of human beings.
Oh yeah, welcome to the party. I mean, I spent the first 25 or 30 years of my life hanging out with animals because I thought human beings were dangerous. I have nothing to do with them.
Yeah. And it now was so yeah, now you're this most loving person. And what I see is that what you just said, the reason I'm saying is because I think we're, as human beings, we are scared of each other because we forgot that we were all together. We all came from the same ocean.
Yes. And we still are. But, you know, if you meet with people on a regular basis in any kind of a community setting, whether it's a church or a business group like you and I are in, or a women's group or a meditation group, what happens is we relax about the separation and we begin to enjoy the communion that happens. But we think it's the people and not how we're built.
So you just said something, Julie, and the word is, it is so, I'm going to be so particular about it. It's the communion.
Yes.
And talk about more with that, because there's something you see.
Yeah.
And it's that word, and it's communion. And what does it mean? And what's the energy of that word?
What communion means is that we behave as though we're all one, so that nobody gets to win and nobody gets to lose. That, like, winning and losing doesn't exist. Mm. It's that we're in life together, finding balance in physical form together. And it's what it feels like. Well, I mean, the experience that I had of it that was the most profound is when I was dancing with someone that I had really just met. I'd only known him for about 48 hours. And I had the experience of not knowing where his hand ended and mine began. So it was like a melding of sorts. And I'm certain that's when two open hearts come together, that's the experience of it, is we disappear into the soul level, into the spirit level, and the mind quiets. The mind is sort of anesthetized by that experience, because it's taken its rightful place. There's nothing for the intellect to do during communion other than rest. Mm. And from communion comes action, and then there's something for the intellect to do. But if the intellect tries to create communion, it has no skills to do that. It's not wired, it's not designed for that.
The communion in Aikido, when I studied Aikido, my teachers would talk about the field, that the field that connects us all.
Mm-hmm. Like the ocean, exactly.
Yeah, and that's what I can see, is that like the space that's between you and I, when I'm open-hearted, we're connecting into that space, and we're communion in that space. Like right now, we're communion.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like we're separate at all. We're just joyfully experiencing life together. Mm. And inviting other people to enjoy with us.
Oh, God.
Now, does that mean that you don't have a daughter that is a challenge? And does that mean that I don't have an aging husband? No, doesn't mean any of that. But it means that there's another understanding. I mean, I like to think of what you and I teach, Anna, as being akin to gravity. Like, it's going to operate whether we understand it or not. Mm-hmm. Open-heartedness is the same way. The three principles that you and I teach about consciousness and thought and creative mind are like gravity. They're operating 100% of the time, whether we align with them or not. Now, I know that when we open our hearts and we practice having the feeling of open-heartedness, that what the physical body does, it's, it comes back into coherence. So literally, if we have kidney issues or heart issues or infections, allergies, the more that we live from an open heart, the more that those things come back into coherence, and healing is possible. So there's a physical readout to all of this as well as an emotional one.
Yeah. I remember one of the women who was in a group that I had done with you, she had her blood work done right before she took the class. And then a year later, and all of her blood work, all the cortisol, all the stress hormones had all
normalized. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I remember that. It was a stark indication of the power of communion and open-heartedness.
Yeah, and the power of having this understanding. Yeah. And she would, so like, it works whether you understand it or not.
Oh yeah, she was certain that there was a pile of bowl.
Yeah, right.
She flopped around about it, and then her blood work read out that way. Yeah.
Right. And then when she kind of settled in, even though she was doing it but didn't understand it, and then she was so surprised by it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's my point about like gravity's operating whether we understand it or not. It's just a better life not falling on your nose all the time or tripping all the time, right? I'm doing this New Balance exercise. I'm friends with gravity again. And I get kind of cocky every once in a while because my balance is getting better and better and better. I stand on one foot while I'm brushing my teeth twice a day. And it's just like this little practice that I put in just to see if I could strengthen, because I've been told by my mother, who lived to be 96, that balance was the thing that really went as she aged. And so I thought, well, what if I worked on that like now while I'm not having balance issues? And so my balance has gotten better and better. But the moment that I get cocky and proud of myself for having more balance, I lose it. So I have to not think intellectually about anything. I have to sort of diffuse my gaze. And my attention has to be on the feeling of balance and not on looking at anything or thinking about anything.
Yeah,
It's like
the feeling
instant
of it.
feedback, and I'll topple over sideways, right?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like bumper cars versus like when I get in my intellect, it feels like I'm in a bumper car
Yes.
versus I'm on a, you know, on a Jaguar on an open highway.
Yeah, and your Aikido study is all about open-heartedness. You cannot survive Aikido at the level that you do it if your heart's closed.
No, the falls are very different. If
Yeah.
you one time I went after a guy and I thought, oh, I'm gonna prove to him. And I had an intention and it was kind of spiteful. I have never been so thrown so hard, and I realized I created that experience.
Exactly. It's the closed-hearted version when the intellect thinks it's got this, all
Yeah.
is lost. Right? Now, I don't want my heart trying to work on a spreadsheet. Thank you very much. Right.
No.
So the intellect has a place. I'm not making the intellect wrong. It's just that we have blown it up to such an import that it's being directed to do something it has no power to do.
Yeah. All right, Julie, we're coming to the end of our time again.
Oh my God, I can't even believe it. This time goes by
Yeah.
so fast.
So, Julie Gleason, your stuff will be up there, but why don't you go ahead and say where people can find you?
I'm at the Art of Living Inc. So it's www.theartofliving.com, or they can email at julie@theartofliving.com.
Great. Thank you, Julie. It's always an
So
honor to have this conversation with you.
lovely to be with you. We could do this for hours and hours and hours.
I know. We might.
Good night. That's exactly right.
Thank you.